Saturday, May 5th, and time to drop in at the Sportsman's Club for another of the favorite stories of Grantland Rice. Yes, Saturday is yarn spinning time down at the Sportsman's Club. That's where the fans gather every week at this time as guests of the Dean of American Sports Writers, Grantland Rice. Grant Rice knows his sports, and he's been in the press box for all the big sporting events of the past 30 years. So now, come along with us. Let's drop in at the Sportsman's Club and meet Grantland Rice.
Well, hello, fellas.
What's on the fire for today, Grant?
Yeah, what's the yarn?
Well, it's a little different today, fellas. Yeah. With the baseball season underway, I thought you'd like to hear a real baseball story.
You bet, Grant. What have you got? Want to ring Lardner's?
No, but it's a story that Ring Lardner would like to have written, because a lot of the characters in it are certainly Ring Lardner characters. But it's not fiction. It's all raw fact.
Well, what do you mean, Grant?
Well, now, here's the way it is. Today, I'm going to bring some stories from a swell new book. It's a story of the St. Louis Cardinals. It's called The Gas House Gang, and it's written by one of the best sports writers ever to lug a typewriter up to the press box and one of the greatest guys you ever saw, J. Roy Stockton of the St. Louis Dispatch.
Oh, yeah.
Roy's book has just been published, and all you fans are going to love it. I can tell you that.
The old gas house gang. There was a ball club.
Oh, you're right, Harry. Especially my old pal, Dizzy Dean. A fellow I've missed more than any man I've ever known in baseball. I can tell you this. Every day was V.E. Day to Dizzy. So just move on in and let's hear Roy Stockton tell us a few of his yarns about the famous gas house game.
Remember old Diz?
How about the time Pepper Morton ran wild against the Yankees?
Today, the Cardinals of St. Louis are big business. The pride of the league. The club that through the years has won pennants and world championships for the National and enabled it to hold its head high right in the teeth of the American League. But, friends, it wasn't always thus. Back in 1919, the Cards didn't have enough cash in the till to make a spring training trip south or enough uniforms to adorn all the alleged ball players on the roster. The Cardinal offices consisted of two drab rooms in an old house next to the ballpark. And established in this suite was a very worried man named Branch Rickey.
Oh, my goodness, Judas Priest. I don't know where the money's coming from.
Mr. Rickey, I've been all over those uniforms, and to tell you the truth, I...
Oh, William. What did you find out, William?
Well, I've been all over those last year's uniforms, and I tell you, Mr. Rickey, there ain't more than a dozen you can use.
A dozen?
Yes, sir.
Judas Priest, can't some of them be patched up?
Well, that's the dozen I got, the ones that can be patched up.
Too bad, too bad. Well, have them cleaned and repaired, William. We'll just have to buy some others.
Maybe you won't be able to match them up, Mr. Rickey. You can't have no two-tone effect out there on the field. Might confuse the ball players.
We'll do the best we can, William. Oh, Judas Priest, William!
What?
What are you doing there?
Well, I'm not doing anything, Mr. Rickey.
Well, you've dropped cigar ashes on the rug.
What? Oh, I'm sorry, Mr. Rickey. But the ashes don't hurt a rug any.
This is terrible. Yeah, let me pick them up.
Oh, just rub them into the rug with your shoe, Mr. Rickey.
I'll do nothing of the kind. Now, please be more careful with these rugs in the future, William.
Yes, sir. I'm awful sorry. Hey, where'd these rugs come from anyhow, Mr. Rickey? I never noticed them here yesterday. Where'd you get them?
Well, now, you've... William, you've just got to be more careful. Oh, Mr. Brown. Well, how do you do, sir? Come in, come in.
Thank you. Lose something, Mr. Rickey?
Lose something? No. I just dropped something on the rug. Sit down, Mr. Brown. This chair here.
Thank you.
Just make yourself comfortable, Mr. Brown. William... Thank you for the inventory.
Inventory?
Thank you very much, William. I'll place the order for the uniforms at once. I think that'll be all, William, for the moment.
Okay, Mr. Rickey.
Well, now, Mr. Brown, I'm delighted to see you. Cigar, sir?
Huh? Oh, yes, thank you.
And an ashtray. There we are.
Good cigar.
Mm-hmm.
Very good indeed. Well, Mr. Rickey, so these are your offices. Very nice.
Mm-hmm.
Not much to look at from the outside, but very nice. These rugs. Orientals, aren't they? Very attractive.
Well, we're just getting organized, Mr. Brown. Rather makeshift for the present.
These fine-looking rugs lead me to believe that you're rather optimistic about the Cardinals, Mr. Rickey.
We are indeed, Mr. Brown. We have the nucleus of a great ball club. Mm-hmm. Now, perhaps we won't win the pennant this year, but we're going to give St. Louis a creditable team, sir. the ashtray, Mr. Brown.
Eh? Oh, yes. Almost dropped the ashes on the rug.
Yes, almost. Well, Mr. Brown, I suppose I come to the point. The Cardinals have a brilliant future, Mr. Brown. But at the moment, I'll be frank with you, sir. We plan to proceed with caution. No extravagances, no spending until the returns at the gate warrant it.
Very sound, Mr. Rickey.
Thank you, sir. Yes, we've even decided to forego the usual spring training trip. We feel that we can condition our athletes just as well here in St. Louis. We've arranged to use Washington University's field and clubhouse.
Mm-hmm. Very good.
However, I think... The ashtray, please, Mr. Brown.
Hmm? Oh, yes. Thank you. Careless of me.
However, we do wish to enlist the support of a few progressive businessmen like yourself, Mr. Brown.
You mean you'd like me to underwrite some of your training expenses?
Well, in a word, yes, Mr. Brown.
I think that can be arranged. I like the way you're doing things, Mr. Rickey. You can count on me.
Thank you.
Suppose you send me an estimate of what you'll need. I'm a great Cardinal fan, and I'd like to help.
Well, splendid, splendid, Mr. Brown.
Mr. Rickey, a telegram just came for you.
Telegram? All right. Give it here, William.
Yes, sir.
Judas Priest. I mean to say that...
Well, I know you're a busy man, Mr. Rickey.
Well,
You'll be getting in touch with me.
Huh? Oh, yes, Brown, to be sure.
Well, good day.
Good day, Mr. Brown. William, give me a hand.
Give you a hand? With what, Mr. Rickey?
Give me a hand moving this furniture.
Huh?
That wire was from Mrs. Rickey. I took these rugs from our living room at home while she was out of town to impress that fellow Brown. Now Mrs. Rickey's coming home. I've got to get the rugs back into our living room before she gets there. Come on, give me a hand, William.
Okay. This looks like it's going to be a kind of a screwy ball club to me.
Well, that year, 1919, the Cardinals took the field in patched-up uniforms after doing their spring training on the Washington University campus in St. Louis. They didn't win the pennant that year, but it was perhaps the most significant year in Cardinal history. For it was in 1919 that Branch Rickey got his greatest idea. He talked it over with a great Cardinal scout, Charlie Barrett.
Well, how did you make out on that boy at Little Rock, Charles?
Same old story, Branch.
They outbid us.
Yeah, sure. I offered $3,000 for the boy. Manager says he'll think it over. And then he goes to the Yanks and says, hey, the Cards are offering $3,000 for this guy. And if that two-bit ball club can afford $3,000, the guy must be good.
Yeah.
What'll you give? You know the answer, Branch. They doubled our price.
Yes, that's always the way. There's only one way out, Charles.
Yeah, I wish I knew it.
We've got to develop our own players.
How?
Well, we could do it if we owned a chain of minor league teams. All classifications from Class D up. It would correspond to a kindergarten, a grade school, a preparatory school, and a university. And we'd find promising youngsters, start them out with a Class D team, and develop them right on up to the big leagues. Then we graduate Sistlers and Cobbs and Matthews.
Oh, it'd take a lot of money.
Well, we'll have to start in a small way. But I'm convinced, Charles, that's the only way we can ever compete with the checkbooks of the Yanks and Giants and all the rest of them.
It's a great idea, Branch.
Branch Rickey talked about his idea at every opportunity. And in 1920, a man came along who listened to him. That man was Sam Brayton. Aggressive, with a square jaw, and a willingness to back up his judgment with dollars. Sam Brayton was a former bank clerk who had moved to St. Louis. He was a baseball fan, and he started buying up Cardinal stock until he finally gained a controlling interest. He liked Branch Rickey's idea, and in 1921, the two men forged the first link of the Cardinal chain. They bought a 50% interest in the Syracuse club of the International League. From that beginning, they went ahead, bought into other clubs. And in 1926, the idea paid off one gray and drizzly afternoon in New York. The principal actor in this drama wasn't a graduate of the Cardinal Farm System, but most of his teammates were. and they had carried the once lowly Cardinals to within one game of the World Championship. There were two out in the seventh inning. The bases were filled, and Tony Lazzari of the Yanks was waiting at the plate, savagely swinging a couple of bats. Jess Haynes, the Cardinal pitcher, was in trouble. Rog Hornsby, who had taken over Branch Rickey's job as manager, went out to the mound.
I better take you out, Jess.
Oh, I don't know, Rog. Maybe I can make it.
You can't pitch with that finger, Jess. Go ahead.
Oh, but, Rog, who you got?
Alexander.
Pete? Rog, he pitched a full game yesterday.
He's the best we got, Jess. Go ahead.
Okay.
Push him up, McCurdy! Push him up, McCurdy!
Yeah, I couldn't see him from the press box, but they say old Pete Alexander was sound asleep in the bullpen when Rog waved him in and then walked out to meet him. Old Pete shook himself and ambled through the outfield. Now, you've got to remember that old Pete had done his job in this series. He had won his game for the Cards the day before. But here he was, trudging out toward the mound, like the great old war horse that he was, ready to try again for Rog Hornsby and the Cards.
Push him up!
Push him up, Tony Lazzari, the fan yelled as Rog Hornsby walked up to old Pete Alexander. And old Pete, rubbing the sleep out of his eyes, grinned a little at the boss.
Well, Rog.
How do you feel, Pete?
Okay, Rog.
Here it is, Pete. Two out in the seventh, bases filled, Lazzari coming up. Got that, Pete?
Yeah, sure. Bases filled, two out, seventh inning, Lazzari up. Rog, there just ain't no place to put Lazzari, is there? I guess I'll just have to give him a lot of trouble.
Get in there, Pete. You can do it.
And so the old war horse ambled on into the pitching mound. He took his practice pitches, shifted his cut of tobacco, spat, and faced Tony Lazzari. And on that gray, drizzly afternoon, old Pete Alexander struck Tony out and then went on to hold the Yanks for two more innings and win the Cardinals' first World Championship. Hornsby for president, and scarcely anyone stopped to consider that Branch Rickey had made his idea pay off, the idea of growing your own ball players. Ball players like this fellow who was to turn up later. He was born at Lucas, Arkansas, Holdenville, Oklahoma, and Bond, Mississippi on January 16th, August 22nd, and February 22nd, 1911. What? A guy can't be born in three different places on three different dates? We'll get to that later. But anyway, this fellow was born. And the way I heard it, just as the doctor turned to tell the mother it was a boy, there was a voice from the crib.
Put her there, Doc. Give me five. I congratulate you, doggone it. You'll always be proud to tell your grandchildren about this day's work. I'm Dizzy Dean, and am I good. But wait till you see Paul. He'll be along in a couple of years. And then look out. By the way, Doc, give me a blank check on any old bank, and I'll write you out what I owe you for this job.
Well, I never did hear what the doc who delivered Jerome Herman Dean into this world said to that. But old Diz was right as usual. He was just as good as he said he'd be, and in 1913, as he predicted, along came Paul. And between them, the dazzling Deans won a world championship and made the Cardinals famous the world over as the Gas House Gang. But about Dizzy having three different birthdays and three different birthplaces. Shucks, that wasn't anything. He had two different names. I talked to him about the situation one day at training camp in Florida. Diz, tell me something.
Sure, Roy. What do you want to know?
Tell me about your names, Dizzy.
How do you mean, Roy?
Well, what is your name? We call you Dizzy, the record books call you Jerome Herman, and your wife calls you Jay. What's the straight of it?
Well, I'll tell you, Roy, it's this way. Now, I wouldn't tell you, except you're a big shot there on the Post-Dispatch. You know Bill McGugan personal to speak to and all that, so here's the way it is. I just can't help doing favors for people.
Uh-huh.
Well, when I couldn't see over a cotton field, it was the same way, Roy. I was always popular with the neighbors, and especially with a man who had a little boy about my age, 6 or 7, I guess. I often wondered whether that man thought more of me or his own boy. Then all of a sudden, the boy took sick.
Too bad about that.
Yeah, now my name in the first place was J. Hanner Dean. And this boy's name was Jerome Herman something or other. Well, anyhow, this boy took sick and died. We sure did feel sorry for his dad. He just moped around, didn't care for nothing no more. So I went to him and told him that I thought so much of him that I was going to take the name of Jerome Herman. And I've been Jerome Herman ever since. You know, he perked up right away, and I guess wherever he is, he's mighty happy.
He must be hilarious, Diz. But what about these places you were born?
Well, it's the same way, Roy. It's this big heart of mine. It's me trying to help you newspaper fellas. Give them a scoop, you call it. Like when I was in Brooklyn, there was Tommy Holmes, Bill McCullough, and that Roscoe McGowan of the New York Times. Roy, can you imagine a New York paper sending a man way over to Brooklyn every day? Well, anyway, they all wanted to interview me and get a piece on old Diz. Well, Tommy Holmes comes first, and he wanted to know where I was born, and I told him Lucas, Arkansas, January the 16th, 1911.
Was that true?
Now, wait a minute. It wasn't 2 minutes after Holmes leaves when this McCullough comes along. He wants to know where I'm born. Now, I wasn't going to have her bosses ball him out for getting the same story. So I told Mac I was born at Bond, Mississippi. That's where my wife comes from. And I picked February 22nd, figuring to give George Washington a break.
That was decent of you, Diz.
Yeah, next comes McGowan of the New York Times, which I don't understand how it makes money not having no comic pictures. Well, anyhow, this McGowan is a nice fella, and I don't want to get him in trouble with his boss. So I tell him I was born in Holdenville, Oklahoma, August the 22nd. Now that way, each of them got a scoop. You see, Roy?
Well, that's fine, Diz, but just between the two of us, where were you born?
Oh, you mean you want a scoop?
They put me in solid with Ed Ray down at the Post-Dispatch.
Well, to tell you the truth, Roy, I'm mixed up myself. I always thought it was Holdenville, Oklahoma, January the 16th. But do you know, my dad stood up there in Branch Rickey's office and said it was Lucas, Arkansas, August the 22nd.
You ought to know.
Yeah, can you imagine that? I told my dad right there in front of Mr. Rickey, if anybody ought to know when I was born, it was me. I was the one being born, for pity's sake. But I believe I'll keep all them birthdays. I got a lot of friends at all them places where I was born, and maybe I'll add Bradenton, Florida. Wouldn't hurt to have 4 birthdays. Don't you think, Roy?
Diz, I don't think it would hurt you a bit. Dizzy Dean, with the proper training, would have made a great fiction writer. There's the time a few hours after Diz and the Gas House Gang had clinched the 1934 pennant. The phone rang at Branch Rickey's country home outside St. Louis. Dizzy was the big man at the time, but the season wasn't over yet.
Hello?
Hello, Mr. Rickey?
Yes?
This is old Diz.
Oh, hello, Jerome.
Mr. Rickey, this is very important. I gotta see you right away.
I'm afraid that's not possible, Jerome. I'm entertaining some friends at dinner. Couldn't it wait until tomorrow at the office?
No, Mr. Rickey, I gotta see you tonight. This is pretty important.
I'd much prefer to talk to you at the office, Jerome. But, well, all right. Come on out.
Well, I sure do thank you, Mr. Rickey. I'll be right out.
Well, at 8:30 that evening, the time is important, so make a note of it, Dizzy Dean arrived with 2 companions. Branch Rickey takes up the story from there.
Well, it was this way. Jerome arrived with 2 companions. One was the High Oskaloosa of some lodge, and the other was a past High Oskaloosa. Jerome had agreed to join the order and was to be initiated the following night, several hours after the team was scheduled to entrain for New York. Jerome had given his word, and although Mrs. Dean had threatened to leave him if he didn't go with the team, he wanted my permission to stay in St. Louis for the initiation ceremony. In desperation, I turned to the High Oskaloosa.
We can't very well put the initiation off, Mr. Rickey. It's set down there in the bylaws.
Why, of course, High Oskaloosa, sir, but do you think it would be proper to initiate Mr. Dean without the utmost in trumpeting, fanfare, and panoply?
Well, he's sure important, I'll say that.
Why, of course he is. The mayor should attend. The governor, the president of the United States.
Well, you think they'd come, Mr. Rickey?
For Jerome Dean? Why, of course they would. They'd be hurt if you didn't ask them.
No, I ain't looked at it in just that way.
Look at it that way, then, High Oskaloosa. Meanwhile, Jerome can make this trip with the club to New York.
Yes, I guess you're right, Mr. Ricky.
Splendid, splendid. And now, gentlemen, suppose you come in and meet my guests.
Oh, no, I hardly think so. No, we'll just run along.
How about you, Jerome?
Well, I guess they'd be disappointed if I didn't say a word.
Why, of course they would. All right, Jerome, just come in and say hello.
Okay, Mr. Ricky, I'll just go on in there and say a word and make them feel good.
All right, this way. Gentlemen, I want you to meet Jerome Herman Dean.
Well, hello, Diz.
Evening, gentlemen.
Yes, and gentlemen, this is a great man. The Cardinals don't deserve him. We can't possibly pay him what he's worth.
Sure, that's right.
Gentlemen, Jerome here can have anything I own. My clothes, my guns, my dogs, my horses, anything. Am I right, Jerome?
Oh, it's no more than I deserve, Mr. Ricky.
There you are. You see, gentlemen, I'm right. Even Jerome himself agrees with
him. Well, that's the way it really happened. Dizzy Dean barged in on Branch Rickey's dinner party with a couple of High Oskaloosas from the lodge. But how did Dizzy Dean report it at his press conference in the clubhouse next day?
You say you have a story, Diz? What is it?
Sit down there, fellas. Here's a story. It's like this. You might put it in one of them deadlines of yours. Make it read, Old Diz fed up with this here hero worship.
How's that, Diz?
Well, here's the whole story. Uh-huh. Last night I was trying to get some rest when the phone rang at 2 in the morning.
Remember, friends, this really happened at 8:30 in the evening.
2 o'clock in the morning it was when the phone rang. Branch Rickey was throwing a big party out in the country at his estate. He had some friends who just had to meet me. Now, Mr. Rickey wouldn't take no for an answer. I had to get up at 2 o'clock in the morning and drive 15 miles out there in the country. And for what?
For what?
Yeah, tell us.
Just so Mr. Rickey's friends could shake hands with me and get me to sign autographs for them. You know, even Mr. Rickey is hero worshiping. After I met his friends, you know what?
No, what happened then, Diz?
Well, doggone if Mr. Rickey don't take me out to his stables and tell me to pick out any horse I wanted. Took me to his kennels and told me to pick out a dog. Then into his big room where he keeps his guns, and he tried to give me his best rifle or shotgun. He even wanted me to pick out one of his best suits. Though for criminy's sake, a man like Mr. Rickey ought to know his clothing wouldn't fit me. Fellas, put it there in the paper under one of them big deadlines. Old Diz is fed up with this hero worship.
Does that give you a rough idea? It's customary for big league ball clubs to hold clubhouse meetings just before a game is played. The manager goes over the list of enemy hitters and tells the pitchers how he wants them to throw to each batter. Well, Frankie Frisch held such a meeting before a September doubleheader
at
Ebbets Field.
All right, guys, all right.
Old Diz was to pitch the first game.
All right, now let's take Leslie first. Keep the ball high and outside for Leslie. He'll hit it over the fence if you get it inside.
Wait a minute, Frank.
Yeah, Diz? Well, that ain't how I pitch to Leslie. I give him nothing but low and inside stuff, and he ain't got a hit off me yet. Yeah? All right, take Cuccinello. Nothing but curves for Cuccinello, see? He owns pitches like Vance. You just ask Dazzy. Tony will slap a fastball into the left field lumber every time you give him one.
Now, that's mighty funny.
How do you mean, Diz?
Well, I never bothered to dish Cuccinello up a curveball yet. And he's still trying for his first foul off old Diz.
Listen, Dean, I'm the manager of this ball club. Get that straight.
Oh, no offense, man, Frank, old boy. It just seems silly to me. Here I win 21 games this season. It don't hardly look right for an infielder like you to be telling a star like me how I should pitch, you think?
What? Oh, what the... Get on out there on the field, all of you.
Well, we've only got a half hour here, but I wish I could tell you about the time Diz Dean and Pepper Martin put on painter's overalls and walked into the dining room with a staid Bellevue Stratford in Philadelphia. They climbed all over the diners, ordering alterations, placing scaffolds, moving tables, and throwing the good brothers of Philadelphia into a state of confusion.
Or, I'd tell you about the time Dizzy recommended a third Dean brother as player talent. He told a scout that brother Elmer Dean was going great with Houston. Elmer Dean was hastily scouted, and Diz was right. Elmer was going great with Houston, but he was selling peanuts in the grandstand. Another member of the Gas House Gang was Coach Mike Gonzalez, who has broken the English language down more delightfully than anybody in the world. Once he visited Frank Frisch in his room at the breakfast hour. Frank was preparing to take a shower and asked Mike to call room service and order. Sauerkraut juice, ham and eggs. Mike was delighted to oblige.
Hello, operator. Room service, please. Hello. Take him down like I say. Sauerkraut juice. Sauerkraut juice. Take him down. Okay. Two fry egg. You catch him. Two fry egg. What do you say? Sauerkraut juice. Okay. Three slice of hang. No, three slice of hang. No, no. Sauerkraut juice. Sauerkraut juice. Okay. Three. Forget the whole thing. I get it myself. Hey, Frank. What do you think? Nobody in this hotel understands English.
Oh, but they understand on the coaching line. The hitters understand him when he steals the signs from the opposition and yells,
"You can do Leo! You can do Leo! She's easy!"
Well, in the Gas House Gang days, if Mike mentioned the batter's name, it meant a curve was coming. If he didn't,
"You can do! You can do, big boy! You can do!"
No name? Well, that meant a fastball. And Mike Gonzalez, the big Cuban, called the turn almost every time. And helped bring many a pennant to the town they call St. Louis. Well, Grant Rice ought to take a whole day for the full story of the Gas House Gang. For the story of Dean and Martin and Bottomley and DeRocher and Frisch and all the others. You can't squeeze it into a half hour. But just one final point. These Gas House Gang boys weren't comedians on the ball field. Dizzy Dean was one of the greatest pitchers I ever saw. Pepper Martin, a guy with a baseball spirit I've never seen matched. Paul Dean was a great pitcher, too. And Leo DeRocher and Frankie Frisch, they were the spark plugs of the most colorful, fightin'est ball club that ever took the field.
Well, fellas, these have been just a few of the stories contained in J. Roy Stockton's fine new book, The Gas House Gang. And now, it's going to be so long for the summer, but we're going to see you all next fall. And so, so long, Bill. So long, Jack. So long, Henry. See you later.
This has been another visit to the Sportsman's Club for the favorite sports stories of Grant and Rice. Today's program, the final broadcast of the season, was based on excerpts from J. Roy Stockton's new book, The Gas House Gang. Today's radio adaptation was by Gerald Holland. Ken Williams played Stockton, Jim Bowles Dizzy Dean, and Richard Keith Branch Rickey. Others in the cast were Grant and Rice, Bill Griffiths, Chuck Webster, Jeffrey Bryant, Kermit Murdoch, and Toby David. Grant and Rice was with us in person. George Crook was at the organ, direction Garnet Garrison. This is the National Broadcasting Company.